will Sie alle ganz herzlich heute in der Bundespressekonferenz begrüßen, sondern Stellungnahme zur aktuellen Lage im Iran. Ich begrüße dazu Reza Pahlavi und ich begrüße Herrn Forsyth, der ihn als Sprecher begleitet. Lassen Sie mich als kurze Vorbemerkung sagen, dass uns als Bundespressekonferenz sehr bewusst ist, dass diese Einladung an Herrn Pahlavi zu vielfachen Debatten und Diskussionen geführt hat. Wir haben Herrn Pahlavi in den letzten Monaten als gewichtige Stimme innerhalb der iranischen Opposition wahrgenommen und in diesem Sinne haben wir ihn heute auch in die Bundespressekonferenz eingeladen. Die Bundespressekonferenz steht als regierungs- und parteiunabhängige Organisation von Journalistinnen und Journalisten für den konstruktiven und sachlichen Dialog mit verschiedenen Positionen. Wir verstehen uns als gelebte Demokratie und Pressefreiheit und finden gerade deshalb, dass auch die Bundespressekonferenz heute dafür ein geeigneter Ort ist, diesen Austausch vorzunehmen. Das heißt selbstverständlich nicht, dass wir uns mit den Positionen unserer Gäste dann auch gemein machen. Dazu vielen Dank. Wir kommen jetzt zu einem Eingangsstatement von Herrn Pahlavi, dann kommen wir zu den Fragen. Wir haben bis 11 Uhr Zeit. Herr Pahlavi.
Thank you very much. Members of the press, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Today I am here before you to speak of the war that has gone unnoticed by too many. A war against the Iranian people by an occupying regime. It is a war that has been going on for 47 years. A war in which the regime just slaughtered 40,000 civilians. And a war in which there is no ceasefire. After years of repression, in January, millions of Iranians rose up. Tens of thousands died. But they did not die for a nuclear deal. They did not die for reform and more of the same. They died for freedom and to reclaim their country. The international media speak of the latest twists and turns of so-called diplomacy, ceasefires, negotiations, deals, but ignores the facts on the ground. A generational revolt, the most profound uprising in Iran since 1979, uniting all Iranians across each of our 31 provinces, and in more than 450 cities, and yes, even elements within the state apparatus itself. When legitimacy dies, power begins to crumble. As Chancellor Merz declared, if a regime can only hold onto power through sheer violence and terror against its own population, its days are numbered. The question is not whether change will come. Change is on the way. The real question is how many Iranians will lose their lives while the community of Western democracies continue to merely watch. As we speak, atrocities are still unfolding that the world cannot see, because the regime has blocked internet access while silencing the witnesses. Its operatives hunted wounded protesters in hospitals and executed them in cold blood. Bodies were collected by dump trucks. Families searched through rows of unmarked body bags. 40,000. The number is too large to comprehend, too abstract. So let me tell you just one of their stories. Salehe Akbari was a 38-year-old nurse during the January uprising. She and her husband, Ahmad Khodai, opened their home to wounded protesters, people too terrified to go to the hospitals because the regime was hunting them down. They treated the injured, they hid them, they saved lives. A few days later, regime agents stormed in. Salehe threw herself between them and her husband. They shot her point blank in the heart, in front of him and their young child. She died in his arms. But then came the unspeakable. Agents who had recuperated her body raped her corpse, photographed the desecration, and sent the images to Ahmad as psychological torture. Broken by grief, he posted a final goodbye on Instagram and attempted to take his own life. Arya Ali Dust, 23 years old, wanted to pursue a career in real estate until the regime killed him in the January protests. His mother is here with us today. Sam Afshari, almost 17, was a champion swimmer. The regime also murdered him in the January protests. His father is here with us today. Mr. Afshari and Mrs. Ali Dust will be here with me after I take your questions, and I hope you will speak with them too. I urge you to listen to them. There are more. In the last 2 weeks, 19 political prisoners have been executed. So let me ask you, do any of you know their names? Have any of you written articles about them? Have you looked into this at all? I read in your newspapers about the tragedies of war. But what of the regime's crimes against my compatriots? It is committing crimes against humanity as we speak. Will the free world do something or watch the slaughter in silence? There are people waiting for the answer. Their lives are literally on the line. As we speak, 20 political prisoners have been sentenced to death and are awaiting execution. Do you know about them? Will you conduct investigation into their shame trials? Each of them is from the January 8th and 9th protests. These 20 people and millions more are waiting to see whether you care about their lives enough to do anything about it. Will you? I want to speak directly to the journalists in this room. The regime has maintained an internet blackout exceeding 1,200 hours, 8 weeks of enforced silence. The Iranian people cannot call their families, cannot document what is being done to them, cannot show the world the crimes committed in their streets. Meanwhile, regime officials appear freely on your networks, post on your platforms, and offer their version of events to your audiences, unchallenged, uncontested, unopposed. You are the only free press the Iranian people have right now. What you choose to cover and how you choose to cover it will determine whether the world sees this revolution clearly or through the fog the regime is deliberately generating. It can literally determine whether innocent people live or die. I am asking you, as journalists, as professionals who understand what a free press is for, to tell their stories. In Germany, you know all too well the danger of dehumanization. Do not allow Iranians to be dehumanized. They are people. They are brave people. They deserve for their story to be told. President Zelensky told me recently, the world did not help the Iranian people enough. It stood aside, and by the time politicians began forming positions, the Ayatollah had already killed thousands. He warned that brutality, rewarded with survival, sends one signal to every bully: kill enough people and you stay in power. And yet, here we are again, on the cusp of the same catastrophic mistake. There are many regime propagandists in the West who are calling the regime's negotiators reasonable, moderate, people with whom we can do business. But Ghalibaf and Araghchi are not pragmatists. They are not reformers. Nor are the IRGC killers behind the curtains. They are different faces of the same machine that shot Saleh Akbari in the heart. They are the ones who will execute these 20 people I just told you about. Yet you call them pragmatists. Let me tell you, the execution of my people is not pragmatic, nor is the blackmail the regime is threatening you and the world with. If you think you can make peace with this regime, you are sorely mistaken. If you allow it to survive, further conflict is unavoidable. There will never be stability, if even a watered-down version of this system survives. The Iranian people want a clean break. They have paid for it in blood. They will not exchange their freedom for an inconvenient fantasy that the monsters with blood on their hands have somehow become the diplomats who will deliver peace. I ask you here in this room, who is representing the 40,000 at the negotiation table? Who speaks for Saleh? Ladies and gentlemen of the press, that is not a rhetorical question. It is your professional responsibility, your moral obligation, and I hope your personal assignment. When spokespeople brief you on progress and breakthroughs and pragmatic solutions, ask whose freedom was negotiated away to get here. The 40,000 cannot hold a press conference. Saleh cannot correct the record, but you can. Europe has not. It claims to stand for human rights, democracy, justice. Yet its politicians ignore the crimes against my people and instead criticize the humanitarian intervention that millions of Iranians pleaded for, the intervention that eliminated the dictator and weakened the regime's apparatus of repression. 88 years after Munich, we gather here in Berlin to ask whether the world will now stand with the people of Iran or continue to engage with the perpetrators of crimes against human dignity, whether it will stand and fight for good or bow to appease evil. In German law, human dignity is sacrosanct, the absolute foundation of all other rights. This regime has made its destruction a governing principle, and it has brought the principle, that principle, to German soil. German courts have linked Iranian state agencies to firebombing and shooting attacks on synagogues in Bochum and Essen. Intelligence services have documented Iranian cyber attacks on the German government, dissidents, and defense industries. And this is not new. The regime brags about the murders it has committed on your soil, like that of Iranian Kurdish dissidents or a beloved artist, Fereydun Farrokhzad. They have no shame. In fact, they boast. This is what they do. They have always done it, and they are doing it still, on European soil, in European cities, against Europeans. The threats to Germany and Europe continues to this day. It threatens you with the terrorists it sends to your shores. It threatens you with the suicide drones it sends Putin in the war against Ukraine. It threatens you with its new long-range missiles that can hit the heart of continental Europe. As long as this regime is in place, you will continue to face these threats, and they will only get worse. No deal will solve this. No negotiations
will solve this.
It is in their DNA. For 47 years, you have tried to change this regime's behavior. And for that, should be obvious by now, you have failed. So today, you have two choices. You can submit and continue to live under constant blackmail, or you can chart a new course. It is time for you to act and solve this problem for good, for your own sake. The Iranian diaspora has delivered its verdict. On February 14th, more than 250,000 Iranians gathered in Munich. They were not alone. They were joined by Germans who value freedom and dignity. Across Hamburg, Stuttgart, and Berlin, they marched under one flag with one demand: a free, secular, democratic Iran. Europe should listen to them and not negotiate with the terrorists who drove them into exile. The choice before Europe is not between war and peace. It is between a dying regime that endangers us all and a free Iran that can become a partner for stability. European governments must stop appeasing this regime, expel regime ambassadors, refuse to legitimize any arrangement that preserves the IRGC-centered power structure, prepare to recognize the transitional government when it is announced. The snapback sanctions, the closure of Iranian consulates, the push to list the IRGC as a terrorist organization, these are steps in the right direction, but they are not enough. For 47 years, the world has known Iran through the action of a regime that took a great nation hostage, chose ideology over its people's well-being, and exported terror instead of peace. But that is not the real Iran. The transitional government I envision will honor these commitments from the very first day and Iran's nuclear ambitions immediately and permanently, and all support for terrorism. Release every hostage. Free every political prisoner. Normalize relations with the international community. A free Iran will be a stabilizing anchor for the entire Middle East, ending the proxy wars that have ravaged Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, and Syria, and become a partner for regional economic integration. Its energy potential, reconnected to global markets, would benefit European consumers, Persian Gulf neighbors, and the Iranian people alike. This is the single greatest untapped opportunity for regional peace in a generation, and more than $1 trillion in economic opportunity in a decade ahead. That is only possible when this regime is gone, when the Iranian people's revolution succeeds. The Iranian people are not asking you to fight their revolution. They are already doing that, and with a courage that should humble all of us. They are asking something far more modest. Do not legitimize those who oppress them. Do not strengthen those who terrorize them. Prepare for the day when Iran stands free. There are moments in history when neutrality is not a position, it is a decision. When caution is not prudence, it is complicity. You in Germany know this all too well. You know the cost of appeasement. I am asking you, on behalf of a nation, to stand on the right side of history, to stand for justice. The Iranian people have already done the hardest thing. They stood in the street. They faced the gun. They said the name of freedom out loud in a country where that word could get you killed. They did not wait for the world's permission. But they are still waiting for one thing, for the world to catch up with their courage. The choice is yours. With or without the world, with or without Europe, with or without Germany, our fight goes on. We will not rest until our nation is free, until our people have their dignity restored, until justice is served. But if you stand with us, if you act in honor of those 40,000 innocent protesters, you will save lives. You will stop the flow of blood. On the day of our victory, I hope to be able to tell the people of Iran that Germany stood with them. Thank you.
Wir danken Ihnen.
Hey Leute, politischer Journalismus muss nicht kommerziell oder öffentlich-rechtlich sein. Podcasts müssen nicht durch grässliche Werbung finanziert sein. Jung und Naiv ist der beste Beweis dafür. Damit das so bleibt, unterstützt uns einfach finanziell. Danke vorab und jetzt geht's weiter.
Wir kommen jetzt zu Ihren Fragen. Ich bitte aufgrund der großen Nachfrage, die ich eine lange Liste schon habe, sich auf eine Frage und eine Nachfrage zu beschränken. Wir fangen bei der Kollegin hier vorne an.
Dankeschön, thank you very much. Charlotte Weyers, Dutch Public News Channel, NOS. Mr. Pahlavi, thank you. In order to lead a new government in Iran, previously you have emphasized the importance of military involvement of the USA. Now that the US military is involved, at the moment a regime change doesn't seem to be happening. How have your plans changed? What is your new plan now?
The strategy is ultimately for people to be able to reclaim the streets. Obviously, when you are faced with such level of brutality, you have to strategically retreat until the time comes for them to safely return to the streets again. This is why a continued campaign that would give them minimal protection so that the regime's thugs on the streets cannot shoot to kill people that come out of their homes, that at least gives us an equalizing chance to have a real opportunity for that. The importance of that intervention was exactly the argument that people that are defenseless, that are hostages, need to have some level of outside assistance. That's a factor in our cause for liberation.
Eine Nachfrage. This protection, how does this look like?
Because could you please speak
louder? Yes. How would this protection look like if there is no presence of military in the streets?
Because the very same people, when they see that the regime was on the retreat, and that's when they started moving forward, were all of a sudden faced with this brutal reaction. Understand that the regime, in the meantime, is crumbling. There are internal rifts. There are people that are refusing to show up to work to repress the people. They have refused to carry out orders of repression, to the point that the regime had to import over 5,000 elements from outside of Iran, not even Iranian citizens. They come from Afghanistan, they come from Iraq, they come from Lebanon, to do the dirty job, to hit the people. At some point, the regime is going to run out of resources. They're going to run out of the ability to pay their mercenaries. This is an opportunity for the people again. We have to adjust to the reality on the ground. That doesn't mean that we abandon the fight. But the reason I'm here to tell you how important it is for the world not to be observers, to intervene, to act in a humanitarian way, meaning in order to save more lives, you cannot throw the people to the streets to be butchered. They need to have some level of support and protection. That's why foreign intervention was necessary. Otherwise, it would be very difficult for people to think that they can single-handedly and defenseless and unarmed face the brutality of the regime. That's the leveling element.
Khairuddin.
Khairuddin, Rheinische Post. Ich würde die Frage auf Deutsch stellen,
das ist,
oder?
Völlig okay. Also ja. Sie können die Fragen auf Deutsch oder auf Englisch stellen, sodass wir haben eine Simultandolmetschung.
Alles klar. Trump hat die Waffenruhe mit dem Iran jetzt auf unbestimmte Zeit verlängert. Was halten Sie von seinem Vorgehen und was würden Sie sich von ihm wünschen?
As I said in my speech, thinking that the regime has the ability to actually commit to a lasting peace is a little bit too much of a fantasy. And the reason I'm saying this is because if you see the pattern of behavior that the regime has displayed all these years, concealing their true intentions, hiding their nuclear program, being totally non-transparent in their true intentions. The actual rhetoric that they use within Iran, the belligerence that they talk about, their entire behavior is not indicative that they're prepared to change in any form or shape their behavior. But why is that? Because they can't. If they cease to do what they do, they're no longer the regime they claim to be. They're no longer a regime that is trying to export an ideology at the cost and expense of its own citizenry, and they've done that for 47 years. As I said again, the whole narrative of ceasefire and negotiation is still based on thinking that somehow the behavior is not going to change, and you're going to deal with people who all of a sudden have become pragmatists. I don't see that happening. I'm not saying that diplomacy should not be given a chance, but I think diplomacy has been given enough chance, and every time it has had setbacks. This is time to readjust your foreign policies, to think that this regime is a solution at the end. The solution is the liberation of a nation that is asking you to take their side for once. For 47 years, the people of Iran have not been part of the equation. For 47 years, they've been ignored. They are not even part of these negotiations. And I'm here to speak on behalf of millions of Iranians who are voiceless to tell you, rather than investing on this regime, invest on them. Let them be the agents of change. Let them be the people who will bring you peace and stability, unlike a regime that has no intention other than survive at any cost, albeit killing thousands of innocent Iranians just to survive. This needs to be part of the consideration. And I don't think that I can judge the behavior headline to headline. I've learned one thing in the past few weeks. Whatever we hear coming out of Washington, let's judge on the results as opposed to the words that are being said here and there on social media.
Aber Sie haben zugleich vorhin auch eine Art Minimum Protection für die Menschen gefordert. Und wenn aus den USA eine Rhetorik kommt wie Zivilisation auslöschen, hilft das der Opposition im Land?
You know, Iran is a country with 25 centuries worth of civilization. For a country that has hardly been on this planet for 250 years celebrating their independence, I don't think that any government or any foreign country can determine the survival of a civilization or not. We as Iranians are proud of our civilization, and nothing can change that. The reason is that acknowledging the people of Iran is the best way to preserve not only your own interests, but also preserve a civilization that actually has contributed to the world. I find it surprising that if you realize that Thomas Jefferson actually was inspired by the first Declaration of Human Rights that Cyrus the Great implemented 25 centuries ago. And it is actually within the principles of the U.S. Constitution to talk about Iranian civilization being wiped out. I think this is just words. I'm not taking it seriously. And I think that Iranians will pretty much tell you that we've survived many onslaughts. We have survived many invasions by the Arabs, by the Turks, by the Mongols, and we're still standing. And we will continue to stand. And the reason I'm saying this is because if you look at the energy on the streets of Iran, if you follow the streets of Iran, if you see to what extent people are proud of their culture, their heritage, and you can see it also through the diaspora that despite the fact that they've been forced into life outside of their own countries, how proud they are of their culture, nothing will change that. So I'm not at all frazzled or intimidated by any statement that challenges our civilization. On the contrary, I think the world is beginning to recognize that how different Iran can be when the people of Iran are freed. And they are the ones who will tell you, we are not warmongers, we are peacemakers. The reason we have been brought to a situation of war is solely because of this regime. This regime is responsible for bringing us to where we are today. For years, I pleaded with the Western governments, do not appease the regime. The day will come that you will finally have to face confrontation. I always said we have to avoid conflict. But the continued policy of appeasement has led us to a point that now we are facing actual war. The responsibility is solely on that of the regime. So the world should not add insult to injury by punishing the Iranian people. The world should stand with the Iranian people and help us put an end to this regime. That's the war that is going on. Remember what I first said in my speech. There's a war going on, the war of the regime against the Iranian people. Now the regime is trying to deflect attention and push the narrative as if they are the victims all of a sudden, and the world is against them. No. They are the first culprit in bringing us to a situation of conflict. The sooner this regime is gone, the conflict will end also. Not by means of negotiation with the remnants of this regime, but by helping the Iranian people overcome and topple this regime. That's the ultimate solution that will bring us an end of this conflict and all these narratives or all these statements that we hear now and then. The solution lies in that, ultimately.
Hey, Jung.
Mr. Pahlavi, a personal question here?
I'm sorry, I have a hard time identifying where the sound is coming from. Can you also raise your hand so I'm looking in the right direction?
Right there, over there.
Oh, okay.
In the middle.
Now I see.
I have a personal question since we can see outside that you're here with the help of the lobby group Europe-Israel Press Association. The Israeli government supports you taking over in Iran, and the same government, that's the same government that started a war of aggression against your country with the U.S. So many people around the world think that you are an Israeli asset. Are you?
Of course not. But I'm a friend to Israel and the Jews, and I tell you why. Because again, as a descendant of Cyrus the Great, we take pride of the fact that the very cornerstone of human rights happened at the time that Cyrus the Great, through his cylinder, which is displayed worldwide, that is referred to in the whole of nations as the United Nations, was what coined the very principles of liberty when he freed the Jewish slaves in Babylon and helped them rebuild their temples in Jerusalem. Iranians and Jews have a biblical relationship. In fact, the only two countries that can claim that. In modern history, Iran wasn't the only country in the Middle East that harbored Jews that were escaping Hitler and his regime and were given refuge in Iran. That's part of our history. That's part of our tradition of harboring persecuted people. Jews in Iran were free to practice their faith before the revolution and fighting for their rights to be restored and that of any other religion in Iran, because one of the cornerstones of human rights should be protecting people in their freedom of religion. That's what I stand for. And I don't need to be an agent of anyone to do that, but I'm an agent of my people. I'm the agent of the Iranian people. I'm standing here because tens of millions of them asked me to be their voice, to talk to people like you today and explain their vision of the future.
Thanks for the clarification. And regarding your plan, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have never excluded to restore a permanent monarchy with a democratically elected government serving in your name. Why is that? Don't you think a true Democrat would clearly exclude to restore a new monarchy?
Well, let's look at Europe right now as an example. Germany is a republic. So is Belgium. France is a democracy, so is Belgium. France is a democracy, so is Sweden. Italy is a democracy, so is Spain. They're all democracies, right? Three of them are republics, three of them are monarchies. So if you're telling me that people don't have a right to decide via the ballot box, what's their preferred system, which is what I leave it to, then you're not respecting the will of the Iranian people. I don't get to decide that. You don't get to decide that. They get to decide that. What I stand for is free elections. What I propose is a process whereby, through the ballot box, the majority of the Iranian people will have to decide what is the best system suited for their interests. They get to choose. And the only role that I have for myself, and I offer to be the transitional leader, is precisely to bring them to a position where they can make that choice. And I think democracy is not about eliminating democratic options. It's by allowing people to have choices. So we're not subtracting, we're just allowing people to have a choice, provided, of course, that it is a democratic option. Not every option is democratic. That goes without saying.
Hoyekert.
I'm over here. Hello.
The small lady over there.
Hey. In a French TV show, you recently said that you never argued for military intervention in Iran, but on the 10th of February, you clearly stated in an interview with Glenn Beck that only a foreign military intervention could neutralize the apparatus of repression in Iran, and only that can be the solution. Do you feel responsible for the many innocent Iranians who have died through the U.S. and Israeli bombs, may I say illegal, bombing that you supported?
First of all, the targeting of the regime's infrastructure and its elements of coercion was absolutely something that the Iranian people actually called for. They were asking, they were in fact insisting that come and help us. Based on what President Trump has said at the time, that if the regime hits the people, they would see a very harsh response. The air cover campaign that included hitting the regime infrastructure and apparatus of repression was a necessary step to equalize the playing fields for Iranians that were getting massacred on the streets, defenseless, by the regime that used military weapons to shoot them on the street. How else do you expect defenseless people to have a chance to actually overcome this regime without some outside help? Many times we saw conflicts where outside interventions were necessary. The partisans fought fascism with outside help in Italy. France was liberated when the Allied landed on the beaches of Normandy to put an end ultimately to the Second World War. This is the kind of intervention that should be perceived as an element that helps the people as opposed to the regime. And of course, I'm not shying away from that position that we have every right to tell the world when we are being shot on the streets, how else are we supposed to protect ourselves? We can't do it by ourselves. In fact, that was in the interest of protecting more lives from getting lost. Because the more the regime has a means to suppress people, the more casualties we will face. This is something that, in fact, limits the casualties as opposed to add to the casualties. And no one likes to see civilian casualties. Of course I don't. Of course we ache for anybody that has been collateral damage. But we are not apologizing for calling for our freedom. We went to the streets and I told people on the eve of that protest, why don't you chant your slogans, whether from home or on the streets, for freedom? And that's what they did. The result was the regime massacring people to the tune of 40,000 people or more in less than 48 hours. Should we say, oh, the regime will kill us if we call for our freedom, so we better not ask for it? What person, what patriots will shy away from asking for our freedom? That's all we did.
Again,
so I think the world should be apologizing to Iranian people for ignoring them. You should be the ones apologizing to the Iranian people that for 47 years, your governments have appeased this regime. You turn your back on the Iranian people. They didn't rise up only this time. They rose up many times in the past 40 years. They rose when Khatami became the first president. He threw students from their dormitories when they were protesting the fact that he was not delivering on his campaign promise. Later on in the Green Movement, they were thrown under the bus yet again. Okay. During the Women Life Freedom Movement, symbolic gestures, but still continued the appeasement of the regime. Even today, as I speak to you, you're shifting back to a mode of appeasement.
Again,
I think you should
French
be
TV,
apologizing to the people of Iran for appeasing the regime as opposed to having their back. I'm here to tell you, we are asking you this time to support the Iranian people. And we're not going to apologize for that demand because I think the Iranian people deserve your support. And I told you, we will fight the fight regardless of whether you help us or not. But let that be on your conscience.
Again, on French TV,
I think you asked too many questions.
No, I can ask one more question. That's my right. Again, on French TV, you clearly stated or you denied the fact that you supported military intervention. And
yes,
now,
I do. I did.
And
of course I did.
You denied the fact.
I just told you the reason.
Can you please let me ask my question? You denied the fact that you support military intervention. Now, again, you legitimize the military intervention. I have another question. Your wife has in the past shared a post with a poster that says death to the left. Do you distance yourself from this sentiment? Is that according to your own values and the values that you want to bring if you ever were to be the leader of Iran?
Look, when my wife and many other Iranians were marching on the streets of Paris during a protest during the Women Life Freedom Movement, they were heckled by the very same left that you say by chanting slogans calling for the Shah's death or things of that nature. So nobody should be defending that kind of language coming from whatever side it is. I do not condone it. I do not defend it. I think that's below the standard of pluralism and tolerance. But the real issue is to understand what the Iranian people now are focused on. It's not about the left or the right. It's about liberation versus captivity. It is not about who will win the vote at the end of the day. It's about the fact that we don't have the choice to vote right now under this regime. Let's be focused on what's at stake here. And be careful about the narrative that the regime and its elements keep pushing to try to split the Iranian opposition, a narrative that are carefully engaging in social media, in cyberspace, to provoke tension, to provoke conflict. Many of these accusations come from fake accounts on Instagram and on X. You should know better as journalists. So I ask you to be more diligent and dismiss those fake accounts or those fake narratives that is aimed solely as an attempt to derail the situation. But yes, I also will defend the fact that we should not promote or say that hate speech should be part of the equation. It is frowned upon, it is not acceptable, and I, for one, have always condemned that kind of behavior, and I'm on the record for it.
Die Kollegin. Das ist Mikro. Okay, bitteschön. Ja, ich selbst, hab's gesehen. Ja, Sie sind dran.
Ja, danke. Auf Deutsch.
Und question on German.
Danke, Herr Pahlavi, Laura Cipul von web.de und GMX. Sie sind hier in Berlin, um Bundestagsabgeordnete zu treffen. Wie bewerten Sie denn den Fakt, dass die Kabinettsmitglieder sich nicht mit Ihnen treffen wollen? Und was erwarten Sie von Deutschland?
I think it is a shame that, again, government authorities who are under duress because they have to consider the blackmail that the regime forces on them by taking hostages or by other concerns, are not open to have a dialogue with people who are here to represent the voice of the voiceless. I'm not here to campaign for myself. I'm here to tell them, hear out the Iranian people. Understand what is going on the streets of Iran. Understand what is their ask from your respective governments. Governments that supposedly stand for freedom, who stand for human rights, who stand for equality. But when it comes to an opportunity to implement it, you choose to continue negotiating with a regime that has demonstrated its complete violation of all of these aspects. And we are here to say, how can we be protected in the sense that instead of allying with us, as people are fighting for the very same values that you're supposedly defending on your soil, you are in fact allowing for a continuity of a regime that is repressing us and denying us all these rights. We are trying to liberate ourselves, and the solution to all of the problems that you face, pragmatically speaking, security concerns, terrorism on your soil, the spread of Islamic radicalism in Europe, and many other aspects of it, all connected to the continued survival of this regime in Iran. That's what's at the equation. Don't look at it necessarily because it's purely a matter of humanitarian concern. Out of your own interest, you should consider what is happening because the situation is not going to get any better. The situation could even get worse. And who knows by then how much damage will be done. This is a golden opportunity when this regime has been never as fragile as it is right now. To be done with. This is not just the concerns of Iranians. Many countries in the region right now are telling you this, that this is a wounded beast that will strike back with revenge and retaliation. It's an opportunity to put an end to it. I see that as the ultimate solution that will immediately eliminate many of the problems we're facing. It's not just about humanity, it's not just about human rights and democracy, it's not just about stopping execution, it is also stopping migration, it is also putting an end to energy dependence and curbing to another form of blackmail that comes from Moscow this time on your energy requirements. Imagine all the economic opportunities and what it will mean to your economies once Iran is freed. These are the kind of calculations that ought to be the focus of your governments. This is the kind of discussions I'm having with your parliamentarians and various political parties. But if your governments continue to focus only on somehow maintaining the status quo, you're neither helping us liberate ourselves, nor are you truly addressing the concerns that you will have down the line. This is what ought to be the focus. But if I'm denied an opportunity to explain that to your leadership, I wonder how else they're going to be able to have that kind of assessment. Did we ask you not to talk to the regime? You have. Diplomacy is diplomacy. But I think it should be the prerogative of democratic governments not to be dictated by a bunch of thugs and terrorists who you get to talk to and you don't. It's not their prerogative, it's yours. Exercise your prerogative as democracies. You're entitled to talk to whoever you want, but not succumb to their blackmail so they tell you who you should talk to and who you shouldn't talk to. I'm sure the German people will expect that too from their governments.
Thank you.
Hello. Hi, I'm Anna Norskevich with CBS News. So you supported the U.S.-Israeli bombing campaign of Iran, but clearly 7 weeks in, the regime has not collapsed. If anything, it got stronger and more hardline. Did you have or do you have a reality check after 7 weeks? Do you think that eventually there could be a regime change? And also, aside from military strategies or even policies, what did the West gotten so wrong about Iran?
First of all, your characterization is not something I agree with. The regime has been severely hit. It has been severely fractured. There are dissensions among the ranks. There are defections that have begun weeks ago, even months ago. Elements both within the military and security forces as well as the civil bureaucracy. There are some people looking for a way out of this regime. The decisiveness of putting more pressure on the regime is a huge factor that will make people decide when it's time to abandon ship. However, if all of a sudden in the middle of a campaign, everything comes to a stop, whoever had an intention to do something about it might step back and say, wait a second, what's going on here? One day they talk about strike, the other day they talk about ceasefire. One day they talk about negotiations, one time they talk about hitting Iranian infrastructure. Well, which one is it anyway? Point is, it creates confusion. But if the campaign continued in the sense of giving at least the minimal aerial protection, which is what was happening, the drone coverage, that was a necessity, as I said, for people to at least have some degree of equaling the playing field for themselves. But to see it through, and ultimately, when it comes to who are the boots on the ground, because that's one of the expressions that you often hear, well, it is the people of Iran who are the boots on the ground. We're not expecting foreign military to land on Iranian soil. We have to do that part ourselves. So Europe says, you know, we don't want to be involved in conflict. We don't want to be sending troops and all that. Fine. But there's a lot of things that Europe can do that it hasn't. Nothing has been done to help us with internet connectivity. Nothing has been done by putting more pressure on the regime to stop executions. Nothing has been done to force them to release political prisoners. Yes, there have been some steps taken, like putting the IRGC finally on the list of terrorist organizations. As I said in my speech, that was a good step, but it's not enough. Expelling their ambassadors, shutting down their chanceries, expelling elements that are directly tied with the regime's operations here to threaten citizens of this country or be involved in terrorist act or money laundering. There are so many other aspects that the world can do to at least indicate that they're not going to reward the regime on its behavior, and also be supportive of the Iranian people in different ways. Not everything comes through military conflict. A lot of it comes with actually strengthening and helping civil society in Iran. We need a lot of help in the process because this is a two-phase issue. We're not just talking about a campaign of putting an end to the regime. A lot has to do with the transition part. And that's an element that is part of the discussions I would like to be able to have with governments to explain to them what will happen once the regime collapses. Because I've been asked this question many times by journalists, by diplomats, by people in government. What's next? What is going to happen? Are we going to have another scenario like what happened in Iraq or Afghanistan? And I explained to them, first of all, Iran is very different than Iraq or Afghanistan. And also because, contrary to what happened then, the void can be filled. And the explanation of how we intend to fill them, and all the components, and all these elements I was telling you about that are looking for an opportunity to defect are part of maintaining the stability of the transition post-regime collapse. So when you are not clear in your intentions, when there's all of a sudden a stoppage of the momentum, that creates an element of confusion and unclarity. Not because the campaign was wrong, but because it's not carried out all the way it should finally put the final nail in the coffin. The regime has not been more strong. Yes, they are vengeful. Yes, they are building up their narrative. But I think that's not a sign of strength. That's actually a sign of weakness. As I said, they are importing foreign elements to do the dirty job on the streets because they cannot rely on their own elements to do the dirty job for them anymore. This, to us, is a sign of the regime crumbling. It's a sign of people defecting, which is good for our cause and bad for the regime. I just hope that, as journalists, you monitor that. I just hope that you understand the reality on the grounds in Iran, not the narrative the regime is trying to push through its propaganda machine, and currently they have exclusive opportunities to do that because Iranians don't get to tell their stories. You can't hear from them because you've been cut off. So what can be done so you can actually hear what the people of Iran have to say about this? That's really part of the missing element here. And we're trying to do our best to communicate these messages to the world, to the international media. But I hope you do a little bit more on your part to be more inquisitive and be more aware of what's really happening on the streets of Iran, and not just to take whatever the regime pushes at you in their version and their narrative and take that as the reality on the grounds, because it's far from the truth, what the regime is trying to push through its propaganda machine.
One more question?
Yeah. The civilian toll of the war, which you just called collateral damage, is so huge. Do you think personally that you've lost your opportunity to ever play a role in Iranian politics after this, after supporting this campaign?
I don't know what you mean by huge. If you're referring to the regime statistics, I never trust the regime statistics from the get-go. It's certainly not what you said. Have there been casualties? Yes, there have been casualties. But most of the casualties are the regime elements themselves. Most of them are either IRGC elements or Basij elements or anything associated with the regime. In fact, the minute what happened on January 8th and 9th happened, I called for people to stay at home, to protect themselves, first and foremost, to put their personal safety as a priority. And we've done that, knowing that we have to see what pans out. When will be the next opportunity to continue the fight? And you know what? Why don't you ask the Iranian people what they think of me? Why don't you ask them what there is expectation of me? Why don't you ask them why they continue to support me? Why don't you ask them when they come by the hundreds of thousands in demonstrations from Sydney, Australia, to Vancouver, Canada, to Munich and Berlin? Yeah. That means inside Iran, tens of millions of Iranians chanted my name, and they still do. That tells you that they have faith and confidence in me, who for 47 years has been fighting for one thing and one thing only: their chance to liberate themselves and determine their own future. Today's Gen Z in Iran are my biggest supporters. You don't hear it because you're disconnected from them. So please, go and do your own diligence. Don't push this narrative. Don't push this propaganda the regime wants to propagate. Ask them. You'll get your answer. But you're not doing that part. You're only reflecting what you hear by the regime, but not what the people have to say. I have full confidence that the Iranian people trust me in that task and continue to ask me to do my job in being their voice and lead this movement to their freedom. I have no doubt about that. You will find the truth one day when you will hear more from the people. Please try to do that. Reconnect to the streets of Iran. It appears to me, more often than not, that there is a disconnect between the world media, Western media, from the reality on the grounds in Iran. That is stupefying for me. I saw that to some extent in Stockholm, and I see another occasion. It looks like you guys are on another planet. You are not hearing what the people on the streets are saying. Maybe it's not your fault because you don't have that information. But seek the information. Don't prejudge based on something you interpret on a narrative that has been pushed down your line. Or maybe sometimes it's a narrative that you don't like to hear because it doesn't fit yours. Whatever it is, the truth is on the streets of Iran by the millions. And I think there are many networks that cover Iran that have access to that information. I urge you to talk to Iranian reporters and journalists who know that fact, who can tell you about what's happening in Iran. They get much more information than you do. Many of them are present here and elsewhere. Talk to them. Talk to Iranian bloggers. Talk to Iranian activists to the extent that you can. Talk to people who are in touch with Iranian political prisoners. Talk to Iranians who are in touch with university professors, doctors, teachers, lawyers, activists. There are so many of them that are, in fact, connected to Iran, and a lot in the diaspora can tell you about that. Be a little bit more investigative. That's really what a reporter is supposed to do. Go and find out the facts. The facts are there. I know they are. Maybe you haven't heard enough about them, but I assure you that once you do, you will come to the same conclusion as well.
Hi. Tyler hier, Producer von Jung und Naiv. Ohne euch gibt's uns nicht. Jeder Euro zählt und ab 20 landet ihr als Produzenten im Abspann auf YouTube. Weiter geht's.
Ich weiß, dass ich mich jetzt gleich total unbeliebt mache, aber die letzte Frage geht also an den Kollegen hier.
Thank you so much. I'm the last one. Thank you so much, Prince Pahlavi. My name is Ahmad Samadi from Iran International TV. I have two questions. I don't know if we have time or not. Many Iranian citizens are concerned that issues such as political pressure, repression, the situation of political prisoners, and demand for justice are not addressed, are not being adequately addressed in Iran and U.S. negotiations. In your view, how serious are these concerns? My second question, I ask both. Also, Iran and the U.S. is officially in a state of ceasefire. In practice, the country in Iran, I mean Iran, is experiencing conditions like wartime. How can people and civil society groups support the another in coping with this pressure? Do you have any plan for initiative to this regard? Thank you.
Okay. I want to make sure I understand the second part of your question. What it is that, could you repeat that part?
My second question is, how can people and civil society group in Iran support and support one another in coping with these pressures? Okay. And what is your plan for that?
Well, obviously, what is at stake is for, again, the fact that they are not even represented in these discussions. So part of the reason I'm here today is say, while negotiations are going on, what is that the Iranian people expect or their demands? And to convey that for the whole world to hear and for governments to take into consideration. So that's one aspect of informing the general public, public opinion, politicians, decision makers, journalists, so on and so forth. And again, part of the reason I'm saying that the most vital element to be reconnected to Iran and be able to access information that is pertinent and critical in any assessment or analysis is being connected to Iran once again. The internet blockage is a huge, huge element that is at stake. And I think part of the demand and discussions that is going on right now that should be included into the discussion. And as I said, at least perhaps if Europe is not at the negotiating table, but they should insist that part of the discussion addresses the question of political prisoners, addresses the questions of continued executions, and the fact that there's no ceasefire of the regime against its own citizenry as they're sitting in Pakistan talking to the American side. And, of course, the internet blockade. This should be part of the demands, not just nuclear enrichment or the Strait of Hormuz or whatever else it is. So that's one thing. And number two, Of course, again, as a result of that connectivity, then civil society within Iran and whatever the diaspora can do to help them as a conduit to the outside world or support that we can give them will have a lot to do with being reconnected to be able to better organize, better implement, better structure. So it does come down to a great extent to our ability to be able to talk to one another so we can organize whatever needs to be organized in terms of actions on the ground and what needs to happen. And I think that's the obvious demand and ask from Iranians who are active within Iran as they are struggling against this regime. So we'll have to see how this pans out. And again, as a last point, I wanted to say that based on what we hear, and again, I said I've learned that in the last few months it's better to see what actually happens as opposed to what's stated. But the latest I've heard, I don't know what you've heard, is that if there is a ceasefire, it's going to be the next few days. So whatever that means and how long will that last, who knows? We'll have to see. All I'm saying is that I don't place much faith into the fact that this will result in any stable situation, even if there was some deal. I don't think it will last very long. I don't think it will be conducive to stabilizing the situation. I think the regime, as always, will regroup and regain some momentum to continue its proxy support and what have you. And we'll see a little bit more of the same. It would be a pity because in the meantime, Iranians are still getting slaughtered. The world is still unsafe. The region is still unstable. Problems continue to flood into Europe, not to mention the footprints of the regime and terrorizing respective citizens of respective countries here. That hasn't stopped. And again, I say the ultimate solution is when we have a chance to be done with this regime once and for all, this is a golden opportunity not to miss. It would be a pity if we don't see an end of this regime now that it's so fragile and ready to crumble. They're begging for survival yet again. Don't throw them a rope this time around. This time say enough is enough. You've been given too many chances. You've never come clean. Forget about this. You've come to a point that you've slaughtered innocent citizens by the thousands. And again, I remind you what Chancellor Merz said. A regime that does this is no longer legitimate. If legitimacy is gone, the people of Iran will not stop short of anything other than a clean break from this regime. And that's what counts at the end of the day. It's not what Donald Trump thinks. It's not what Bibi Netanyahu thinks. It's not what Chancellor Merz or anybody else thinks. What's important is what the Iranian people, 93 million of them, think. That's what counts at the end of the day. That's what I'm here standing for, what they ultimately think of it and what they need to decide for themselves. I'm here to help them, and the reason I'm here talking to you is because we expect Western democracies to be our first bastion for help. We're not looking to Moscow. We're not looking to Beijing. We're looking to Berlin. We're looking to Stockholm. We're looking to Paris or to Rome for obvious reasons. Because we expect that coming from democracies to be helping us in our cause for freedom and democracy. And it would be a shame if the democratic countries decide to opt for indifference or silence and continue the element of appeasement. That is not the answer that the survivors of this latest massacre want to hear from you. And I hope we'll have a little time to talk to them, and they'll tell you exactly what the Iranian people want to see Western governments do so that their children haven't died in vain, so they haven't died for nuclear enrichment. They have died for freedom. That's what really matters at the end of the day.
Ich bedanke mich bei Herrn Pahlavi, entschuldige mich bei allen Kolleginnen und Kollegen. Herr Pahlavi hat weitere Termine und ich wünsche einen schönen Tag. I'm thinking of a question.